The story of Amnon and Tamar is one of the most tragic in the Bible, but it contains lessons for parents that are absolutely vital. In this message, Pastor Chris Chadwick helps parents from the Bible to help navigate the teen years.
2 Samuel chapter 13. And it came to pass after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a fair sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Amnon was David's oldest son. And Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, for she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. And Jonadab was a very subtle man. And he said unto him, Jonadab said to Amnon, why art thou, being the king's son, sick? Being the king's son, lean from day to day? Wilt thou not tell me? Amnon said, I love Tamar, my brother Absalom's sister. And Jonadab said unto him, lay thee down on thy bed and make thyself sick. And when thy father cometh to thee, say unto him, I pray thee, let my sister Tamar come and give me meat and dress the meat in my sight that I may see it and eat it at her hand. So Amnon lay down and made himself sick, and when the king was come to see him, Amnon said unto the king, I pray thee, let Tamar my sister come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight that I may eat at her hand. And David sent home to Tamar, saying, go now to thy brother Amnon's house and dress him meat. And so Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was laid down, and she took flour and kneaded it and made cakes in his sight and did bake the cakes. And she took a pan and poured them out before him, and he refused to eat. And Amnon said, have out all the men from me. And they went out every man from him. And Amnon said unto Tamar, bring the meat into the chamber, that I may eat of thine hand. And Tamar took the cake which she had made and brought them into the chamber of Amnon her brother. When she had brought them unto him to eat, he took hold of her and said unto her, come lie with me, my sister. She answered him, nay, my brother, do not force me. For no such thing ought to be done in Israel. Do not thou this folly. And I, whether shall I cause my shame to go? As for thee, thou shalt be as one of the fools of Israel. Now, therefore, I pray thee, speak unto the king, and he will not withhold me from thee. Howbeit, he would not hearken unto her voice, but being stronger than she, forced her, and he lay with her. Then Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love wherewith he had loved her. And Amnon said unto her, arise, be gone. And she said unto him, there is no cause. This evil in sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me. But he would not hearken unto her. Verse number 17, he calls the servants and he forces her out. Verse number 18, she has a garment of diverse colors upon her, a garment of her virginity. And she took that off. And verse number 18 and 19, and put on a different garment, a garment of sadness. I want you to notice verse 21. But when King David heard all these things, notice what it says. He was very wroth. David was ticked off. Well, why? Because Amnon, his oldest son, and give me some liberty tonight to not have to play out the whole story. This is the worst story, I think, one of the two bad worst stories in the entire Bible. There's one that I dislike more than this one. I really struggle to read this one as well. I don't even like teaching on it, but it conveys the point so clearly. Why was David wroth? Well, because his oldest son forced himself on his half-sister. A half-sister that said when he went to force her, said, hey, don't do this. Don't be like one of the foolish in Israel. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't be like this. You're the king. You're the next king in Israel. This is for you. Everything here is yours. You've got everything. No, I want you. And she says to him, well, then do this. You want me that bad? Just go ask Dad, and Dad will let me marry you. And really all she's saying is, bro, just wait a couple of weeks and let me marry you, and I'll marry you. No, I want what I want. I want what I want now, and I'm going to take it. And then after he abused her, He kicks her out. I just want to remind our single young ladies, that's just how dudes are. That's just how guys are. Don't think for a moment that he loves me and I'll be different. No, he don't love you and he ain't going to be different. You said, no, Pastor, you don't know him. No, I know him because I am him. Don't tell me I don't know myself. I know everything about me that needs to be known. I know me. I know how every one of us are. And I know when we get in that state what we're like. So young ladies, don't believe for a second that you'll be different, because it won't be any different for you, because it's never been any different all the way back to Amnon, all the way back to Adam. Men are sinners by nature. Don't believe the hype. He's a liar, a cheater, and a deceiver. Satan, and all dudes are Satan too. I say that as a dad of daughters. I often call Judith and Natalie up. Who do I need to kill this week? And some of you are like, you don't really say that. I do. Whether I mean it or not, that's a different question. Nobody knows but me. But Amnon forces her out. She said, don't force me out. I'll be your wife. And then notice what the scripture says. Verse number 16, there is no cause in this evil sending me away is greater than the other that thou didst unto me, but he would not. In verse number 15, and Amnon, this is what I want you to see. Verse number 15, and Amnon hated her exceedingly, so that the hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the love. The word love is another word for lust here, literally. It's not like agape or phileo. Those would be Greek words. But it's not like that. This is just a lusty word, a word about lust. The hatred wherewith he hated her was greater than the lust that he had for her. And so he rapes his sister. She wants to marry him. He kicks her out. She says, don't kick me out. I'll be your wife. Just let me be your wife. No, no, no. I hate you now. I want nothing of you. He kicks her out of the house. She goes on her way. Her brother Absalom is conniving. He's quiet. Absalom's intelligent. You never really know what Absalom's thinking until you know Absalom really, really well. And Absalom doesn't let people get to know him very well. Absalom says to his sister Tamar, sis, don't say a word. You'll live in my house. So she doesn't. And then David hears about it. And you know what David does? Nada. Nothing. He just hears about it. And when he hears about it, he's really, really mad. He's really angry. But he does nothing. I don't like to take Old Testament passages and apply life stories to them unless they really fit. I think you can be very abusive of a text, especially a narrative, and make it say whatever you want to say. I've heard a lot of preachers preach passages of the Old Testament, and the Old Testament wasn't talking about that at all. Now, what they said might have been good, but the Old Testament passage wasn't talking about it. Like, if you've been in church very long, somebody has preached David and Goliath, and they've said something like this. We want to tell you how to destroy the giants in your life. Well, David and Goliath is nothing about giants in your life. David and Goliath is about the giant of sin and the fact that Jesus would have victory over sin. That's really what it's about. You want to apply it that way? Okay, fine. That's good. I mean, it's self-help talk. That's fine. But you got to be careful in doing that, because it might sound really good, but it might not be what God's intent was in the text. It might not be God's intent. You say, well, what is God's intent? I mean, I've really thought about this for the last couple of weeks. And I think God left this text in here to see the depravity of sin, no doubt. To see the need for salvation and the need for grace, no doubt about it. But I think from a very practical application, I think that we see a huge failure on David's part. As I said this morning, David was a real crummy parent. And the tie would be between David and Eli as to who are the worst parents in the Bible. And they're both really bad. But we can learn four really awesome truths about navigating the teen years from this passage of Scripture. May the Lord bless His word. You may be seated. I said this morning at the end of the service that my favorite years were the teen years. Let me say this as well. They weren't the easiest years. They just weren't the easiest years. The easiest years for child rearing or to raise children, as far as I'm concerned, is probably the first 4 or 5 years. Now, we're going to talk about some foundational aspects of that. But the first 4 or 5 years, I would submit to you, are the easiest years. Teen years can often be, and most often are, very difficult. And there's some reasons for that. You have young people who are turning into adults. They have to start preparing to leave the home. They literally have to start preparing to leave the home. If they don't want to leave the home, there's a problem. If an 18-year-old boy goes, "No, I could stay here forever." Oh, man, you got to move and just tell them you went on vacation and you'll be back. I'm kidding. Don't do that. But the teen years are really a lot of fun. But they're a lot of fun because they're really going to test your mettle as a parent. They're really going to challenge you. David is a picture here, and what David does and really his failures that we see in this text, we have to learn about. If you look at verse number 2, Amnon was so vexed that he fell sick for his sister Tamar, and she was a virgin, and Amnon thought it hard for him to do anything to her. But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimei, David's brother. So Amnon's cousin's Jonadab. David's nephew is Jonadab. Jonadab was a man of no character. Jonadab, the scripture says, was very subtle. The word subtle means conniving. It's the idea. He's a very conniving individual. He was a fantastic manipulator. That's who Jonadab was. David didn't prevent Amnon from hanging around Jonadab. Now, probably they're older teenagers, if not young adults by this phase, but a pattern of behavior has been established. And the pattern of behavior is, hey, he's your cousin, he can come into your house because we're family, and it's like that. I want you to notice first tonight, you have to be intentional with who you let influence your children. You have to be intentional with who you let influence your children. Who you let influence your children should not be an accident. It should not be an accident. And let me say, it's hard no matter what. It's hard no matter what. But you have to be intentional. You have to work hard to put the right people around your children. You have to work hard at that. When our girls were teenagers, we would send them places where I would have friends that would influence them. I can remember taking a family vacation, and we went to hang out with the Kings, and I just wanted my kids to be around Anthony and Angela. And today they love them very much. Matter of fact, Judith works for the Kings at their church. She's an off-site administrative assistant for them, one of her several jobs that she has. And she works for them off-site. That started a long time ago when we went on vacation there just to hang out with them. I used every airline mile I had. I stayed in a crummy Airbnb location in downtown Honolulu, right above a McDonald's, which is better than In-N-Out. Say it every time. But I wanted my kids to be around them. I want my kids to be around Fergus and Jeanette Tennell. So we've done family vacations with them. I wanted my kids to hang around godly people. So Judith and Natalie, and Judith had some major problems as a teenager growing up. So she would hang out with Miriam White a lot. You say, why? I have no idea. That's probably a big mistake. No, I'm kidding. We were intentional because I knew Miriam was always in a way that only Miriam could do, in a way that Judith needed. Hear me. In a way that Judith needed. Maybe Natalie didn't need it as much. But in a way that Judith needed, Miriam would take this really long circuitous route. That means it took way longer to get there than I ever could, of taking Judith from a place of stupidity to a place of knowledge. And Miriam would talk to her, and they would have coffee, and they would go downtown, and they would do all of this stuff to come to the same conclusion that Dad would have just said in 30 seconds. That's stupid. Don't do it. But you know what she needed? She needed that. And not just Miriam. Judith would hang around Bernie and Leslie. She calls them Uncle Bernie and Aunt Leslie. She's like, hey, how's Aunt Leslie doing, Dad? Like, oh, she's pregnant again. She's always pregnant, Jude. She's just pregnant. She's just this little old woman who lived in the shoe. She had so many kids, she didn't know what to do. And relationships were super important to her. Natalie, on the other hand, was a little bit different. We had to be intentional in who Natalie would hang out with. Now, this isn't a Pat Christianic on the back. There's a lot of stuff I screwed up in here that we'll talk about. But we have to be super intentional with who we allow to influence our kids. I don't know why David allowed Amnon and Jonadab to hang out with one another. I don't know. The scripture does not give us insight. So I'm going to give you a little bit about what I think. Now, again, you could have a difference of opinion because the scripture isn't clear on this point. It's a little bit of a gray area. But it seems to me to make sense that Amnon and Jonadab were cousins, and maybe David didn't want to offend his brother Shimei, and so David simply allowed Amnon and Jonadab to hang out with one another because Jonadab's reputation was really, really bad. Because when Samuel is writing this, he's saying he is very subtle. The idea is that everybody knew about Jonadab. I don't know why, but I think David felt maybe some familial pressure, some family pressure, to allow his brother to hang, or his son to hang out with his brother's son. And can I tell you, I understand that pressure, but can I free you from the burden of having to allow your kids to hang out with a really crummy family member? You say, well, my family might get mad. I don't care. That doesn't matter. Well, what will they say about me? That doesn't matter. Well, my mom might get upset with me. Let mama get upset with you. How many of your moms have ever been upset with you? Why are you worried about this one? Dads. Primarily, this is your responsibility. Well, I mean, they're just going to say stuff. And they can get their feelings hurt all day long. It's okay. Let them get their feelings hurt all day long. I would rather them have their feelings hurt than wind up with your kid in juvenile hall. I'd rather them have their feelings hurt than it cost your daughters their purity. I'd rather have their feelings hurt than your kids seeing something on the internet that they should never see. You say, oh, Pastor, that would never happen. Come on, man. We know better than that. Some of the worst people I knew I was related to. Seriously. David just was not intentional. And that doesn't mean you don't go to a family reunion. That just means you have to be very careful about what goes on when you're at the family reunion. I mean, the worst trouble I ever got in, like legally, was with family members that I wasn't related to. Somebody needs to say, no, that just can't happen. If you have a feeling, I think I put this there. If you have a gut feeling, how many of you know that gut feeling? How many of you know, like, oh, there's just something that tells me this is wrong. If you have a gut feeling, you need to be very attentive. Because let me tell you this, Satan is not trying to keep your kids safe. Satan is not trying to keep your kids safe. And so here's what will happen. Dads will have a gut feeling. Moms will have a gut feeling. And they'll say, I just have a feeling. I don't know what the issue is. And since I can't prove anything bad, I'm going to go ahead and let them do it. That's the dumbest decision to do. You have to be guided by the Holy Spirit of God. People say, well, you got to have facts before you say your kids can't go somewhere. No, you don't. They're your kids. You don't need any facts. They're yours. Well, they'll get their feelings hurt. Hey, young people, I don't mean to be the punk pastor tonight, but you're about to be punked. Who gives a rip about their feelings? Why are you so concerned about their feelings? I mean, do we have nothing more than feelings? It took you guys a while. I'm concerned about their heart. I'm concerned about their walk with God. I'm concerned about the enemies attacking their life. I'm concerned about Satan getting an inroad in there. You don't know that one thing that could turn your kids around for the rest of their life for the worse. And when the Holy Spirit of God puts that thing in your gut and you're like, I'm just going to go ahead and don't do it, but I don't think it's the best idea. Man, you are foregoing the guidance of the Spirit of God. Stop! And let Bonnie Foo Foo be mad all night long. That's okay. How many of you are big enough to handle your kids being upset with you? Here's part of the problem. You're codependent. Your kids need what they, or they want their feelings met, and you want your kids to like you. You can't be a codependent parent because then the kid's now the parent. Well, that, what am I going to do? That's just the way that it is. Shut up. That's not the way it has to be. You have to be intentional. I want to be careful. When we talk about, we're talking about morally weak people here. Here's what I've seen a lot lately. Anytime, this is where we're at in 2019 parenting, all right? Anytime that a kid feels uncomfortable, parents want to come in and kind of protect them. Anytime. Why are you doing that? See, there's a difference between morally weak people that could lead your teenagers astray and people who will challenge your teenagers to be better. I was talking with one of our brothers who coaches at the YMCA, and by the way, I love the fact that they coach at the YMCA. Love that. It's a great outreach tool. But they, whether a kid shows up to practice or not, when I was a kid, you didn't play if you didn't practice. And practice in my world was more important than the game. Like, you don't practice, you don't play. How many of you remember those rules? No play, no practice. And if you don't practice, hey, I don't care how you feel about it. But now, at the Y, if you practice or not, it doesn't matter. You could just show up to the games and you get equal playing time. EPT. My coach didn't understand how to say equal anything. Like, nope, you're not trying, you aren't giving any effort. You can be lazy at the end of the bench. The coach will try harder. This is my coach. Too late. You'll try harder in practice tomorrow, Chris. What do you mean, coach? You're running 5 miles. Be there at 5 a.m. because practice starts at 6, and you're going to be done with those 5 miles by 6 a.m. And you say, well, my kid would quit. Well, if I quit the team, I had all the rights to quit the team, but I just had to move out of my house. Because you weren't allowed to quit what you started in the Chadwick household. You didn't have to play sports, but once you started the season, you weren't allowed to quit. Unless the coach was a moral midget. My dad didn't care if he beat you up. He just didn't want him looking at porn on the side. Seriously. See, we allow stupid people to influence our kids. And then a guy gets up and he talks that's not politically correct. And even in the church, and people are like, oh, that's just so hard. I don't think my kids can handle it. No, your kids can handle it, but maybe you can't. And I'm not trying to be, we'll finish on a really high point here, I think. But we got to be intentional. I got a video I want to show you. I don't endorse everything the guy says, okay? But I just want you to see the video. And I've not done this very often while preaching, so if you'll kill the lights and show the video. Girls are socially aggressive. Boys are physically aggressive. I don't mind boys punching each other, fighting, wrestling, shooting stuff. Within parameters. Within parameters. I think that's a good thing. Risk taking. Social media, all it allows is literal losers to attack your daughters. Amen. Natalie told Debbie on Friday night, this guy, now Natalie's 20, all right, she's 20. And she's a mature 20. She, maturity level, she's probably like 20 and a half. And she had some dude on Instagram send her a message. And he said, hey, I saw you lift. I saw the stuff that you do on Instagram. I'm like, why is your account public? We're going to have a long daddy-daughter conversation. It won't be that way in about 2 weeks. And he said, I just want you to know, I want to be somebody's sugar daddy, and here's my name and info, and if you want to call me, I'll be your sugar daddy. And I said, you tell him, you got a packing daddy, because your daddy's about to kill him. Your daddy's going to kill him. He said, well, you would just talk to him. After the fact. Like, man, I hope that didn't hurt too bad. You say that doesn't happen. Happens all the time. One of the things that we don't hear a lot about because of social media and their power and their control and their monopoly of the media, one of the things we're not hearing about is sex trafficking of young girls within the United States of America that are being trafficked via social media by parents who allow their daughters to be on social media all by themselves. This isn't Chris Chadwick came up with this, and I'm not mad at you. We've never faced this as a society. We've never faced this as human beings, where millions of people all over the world can speak into our children's lives. When we were kids, how many of you remember? You went home, you went to church, you went to school, and outside of that and the grocer at the Lucky down the street, you didn't really know anybody other than the folks you let your parents know. Now you know millions of people. I mean, I used to feel informed as a kid because my family, we would watch Peter Jennings and Dan Rather on different nights. I was like, I was the smartest kid in the class because I knew, you know, that Cambodia had Pol Pot and the other kids in my class were just smoking pot. So I was good. I was good. But now it's everywhere. I hope that you heard with this. And teenagers, I know everybody likes social media because nobody wants to be left out. I hope you will be brave enough to choose to be left out. Amen. I hope that you'll be brave enough to say, I don't need Instagram and I don't need Snapchat and I don't need any of that. And I'm just going to give all of that up. Because even as adults, my wife has never done this in 25 years of marriage. But I worked from home yesterday. And literally, I was working till like 6 o'clock. And she said to me at about 10 o'clock in the morning, she goes, I'm going to need the house later today because I'm going to need to clean it. And you don't like it when I make noise in the house because I don't like noise in my house. I don't know why that is, but I'm just that way. And she said, you don't like noise in the house, so I'm going to ask you to do something I've never asked you to do in 25 years of marriage or almost 25 years of marriage. I said, what? She goes, leave. Okay, so I left, and I went to the Starbucks not far from my house just to finish this morning's message and work and read and all that kind of stuff. And I looked around at a coffee shop that used to be a place for talking, communication, and all of that, and I looked around, and every single person in the Starbucks, and maybe there was, throughout the time, it was probably 25, 30 people that would come in and sit down. Every single person had a computer, a smartphone, or an iPad, and some guys had sat in there. I was in there for 2.5 hours, and I felt creepy, and other guys had been in there for hours before I got there, and you could tell they were staying hours longer, and the whole time they had headphones on, and they were just watching YouTube, watching videos, reading Facebook. He said, how do you know? Because I started peering over their shoulders to see what they were doing, because I was interested in the social aspect of this, and their whole life was online, and they would not, and I'm not going to say maybe they would, but they weren't, at least, talking to anyone within a 3-foot radius of them. So here's what I'm saying. And here's what I'm saying about our teenagers. And here's what I'm saying. David really, really failed at. David really failed to control who influenced his children. And let me say this as well. Just because somebody says they're a good influence doesn't make them a good influence. And just because somebody seems nice doesn't make them a good influence. You need to look at the product of their life in total before you say they're a good influence. Because Uncle Festus might be a really great guy if you're 30 and you know just to walk away from him. But you might not want your kid turning out like Uncle Festus. Even in church, we've had some really grouchy, crummy people that have really bad critical attitudes. You don't want your kids being influenced by critical people. Because you know what happens when your kids get influenced by critical people? The natural critical nature of their own heart comes home. And then mom doesn't do anything right and dad's a complete loser. And if you have teenagers, you know they feel that way all on their own. They certainly don't need to hear that from some adult. I love this. I'll share this illustration about my wife. We will finish tonight, I promise. It'll be real quick. But Leslie comes to the office to see Bernie a couple weeks ago, and Abigail is now old enough to talk, so she always wants to come to my office because she gets food. It's not, there's no love there, it's nothing. It's a quid pro quo. I let you say hi to me so you'll give me cashews, and that's the only reason why, or candy or whatever that I end up giving her. And we were in the office, Debbie had brought the girls in, and they were just sitting around, we were just talking, and we had watched like 2 minutes of Peppa Pig, because it's my favorite program. I love that show. It's so dumb, and it's just fun to watch with them, because even the, you know, Jaina and Abigail, and Claire is a little young when she comes. She's never seen it, because her parents are smart, and don't let me influence her. But even Jaina and Abigail are like, this is dumb. And then we heard Bernie outside, and Debbie said, hey, I hear the most important, this is what Debbie said, I hear the most important man outside. And they both stopped, and Debbie goes, do you know who that is? And they said, because every question that's in the positive is me. Like, who loves you, pastor? Who's really good-looking, pastor? Who do you want to grow up and marry somebody like, pastor? Because I'm just dumb that way. We just laugh about it. It's funny. And Debbie goes, most important man in the world's outside. And Abigail goes, looks at Debbie and looks at me. And Debbie goes, do you know who the most important man in the world is? And Abigail goes, pastor? Because she knows. I've trained her like Pavlov's dog. Say, pastor, get a cashew. And so... I was getting ready to hand her a cashew. Good answer, kid. And Debbie goes, no. What? Me and Abigail both looked at her like, who's the most important man in the world then if it's not me right now with the box of cashews? And Debbie goes, daddy. Oh, yeah, he is. So who's the most important man in the world? Abigail looked at me, daddy, here's your cashew. Yeah, why? Because daddy is, to her, daddy's the most important man in the world. We're going to build up dad. Parents, let me just tell you, I would never, this is not a youth group thing, but I would never keep my kids away from a youth activity, because every youth activity, they're going to hear either intentionally or just through osmosis that the most important people in your kid's life are you and Jesus. You're the most important in your kid's life. You don't have anybody in the world on your side. The world tells your kids that you're stupid. Oh, your parents are okay, they'll pay for college. Your parents are okay, they'll do this. Your parents are okay, they'll do that. We're going to tell you, not only are your parents okay, your parents are wise, and you need to go for them to them for wisdom. And parents, you better live up to that too, by the way. You have a responsibility to do that. And we're going to tell them that, and we're going to push them towards you. We're going to be you need to be intentional with who you allow to influence your kids. And let me say this. I don't know if it fits here, but I put it in the blanks anyway. You'll teach your kids how to deal with difficult people, or difficult people will rule your kids' lives. You'll teach your kids how to deal with difficult people, or difficult people will rule your kids' lives. Some of you need to confess the sin of helicoptering your children. Your children should go through very difficult times as kids. And they should learn to deal with it. Now, if it becomes too aggressive, if it becomes scary, if they're in a dangerous situation, but their feelings getting hurt is not dangerous. That's just life. How many of you have worked in a company or military or whatever, and the people at the company or the military did not care about your feelings? Yeah. And we got a group of people now that literally we have to take like safe space retreats. Because if you say, like, hey, I think that was a really dumb idea. Oh, you're so confrontational. Well, listen, we're on a nuclear submarine, and you're wanting to light candles in the reactor area. Well, I think we could all hold hands and sing when we do it. Oh, listen, sweetie pie, I'm glad you want to do all of that, but that's a dumb idea. Be intentional. Let your kids be around people that are difficult. Now, if it gets scary, you got to deal with that. I've had some conversations with people and say, hey, you can't cross that line. You crossed the line. You're not allowed to cross that line. But we're not going to, every time Judith or Natalie came home, just to give a personal illustration, every time Judith or Natalie came home and said, so-and-so doesn't like me, we didn't go run into the school. I just found out recently that in the fifth grade, Judith was at a school down in National City, and she said 4 out of 5 days of the week, the kids stole her lunch and wouldn't let her eat lunch. I'm like, girl, how come you didn't tell us? She said, well, I just was trying to be an adult and deal with it on my own. I said, well, how'd you deal with it? She said, I didn't eat. Sorry. I said, did the teachers know? She said, yeah, and the teachers just said they didn't know what to do either. I said, well, Dad would have told the teachers what to do for quite some time. Very vocally. And you would have seen little kids that would have liked it. They would have been on a trampoline because they'd have been here and they would have been gone, and here and they'd have been gone through a window. And if their parents said anything, they would have went with them. They could have gotten them free of charge. Number one, be intentional with who you let influence your kids. Number two, look at verse number two. And Amnon was so vexed. The word vexed literally means a state of anxiety, a state of fear, a state of frustration. Now, Amnon's a grown man, and he's so vexed that he was sick. You know why he was? Because David never taught him how to deal with his emotions. So point number two, teach your children how to handle their emotions. Teach your children how to handle their emotions. When, and teenagers, I want you to listen to me really clearly. Not every bad thing that happens is a crisis. You know what? It's okay for a boy to break your daughter's heart, but don't let him get too close before that happens. Well, I just really liked him, and now he likes so-and-so, and it just hurts me. Yeah, it won't be the last time a dude breaks your heart. You'll get married, and they'll still break your heart because they're stupid. Teach your children how to deal with their emotions. How many of you have emotional children? If you have children, raise your hand. They're emotional. Now, some of them show it a different way. Stoicism, to not show any emotion, is a form of emotion. Hey, guys, listen to me. Epicureanism, which is given to passion, is a form of emotion. Both sides. You have to teach your children how to handle emotion. Not every little thing that comes down the pike deserves a meltdown. Now, I look at some of our little girls out here, and something happens like the cracker falls on the ground, and they're 2 or 3 years old, and they have a meltdown. That's okay, they're 2 or 3 years old. But even at 2 or 3 years old, you need to start telling them. You don't need to get on the ground with them and go, oh, I understand, it's so bad. Oh, life is so terrible. Mommy will go to the store and buy you a whole new cracker so you feel all better. You say, well, Pastor, what would your parents have done? Pick it up, boy. We don't need that kind of drama in this house. You say, well, what if they get sick from eating it? My parents knew where I came from. They could get more. Bernie and Leslie, I mean, come on. You just keep bringing them on. There was nothing going to happen to me. When you focus on your kids' emotions, you make emotions their God. Now, we can't deny emotions. We go through it. We have fear. We worry. We have stress. All of those things are real. I am not trying to minimize the fact that we have emotions. I'm trying to maximize the reality that we need to learn to deal with our emotions. Emotions cannot control us. That's why we have to think on things that are lovely, honest, pure, of good report, worthy of praise, worthy of virtue. We have to think on those things. I hear my wife talk to my girls, and they're still girls and emotional. And Debbie will say, wait, before you start crying, is this true? Is this true? Are your thoughts true? Did she say that about you? I don't know if she said it, but she thought it. I know she did. So now you have the capacity to read people's minds? Wow, that's amazing. Let's play the lottery. Well, you know what I mean. I do know what you mean, and what you mean is that you're thinking emotionally as opposed to rationally, and in emotional thinking, you're going to make a really dumb decision, so we need to think rationally. Again, emotions are good. The emotion of joy, the emotion of if you want to say peace is an emotion, it's a character quality, but you get the idea. Emotions are good, but we can't allow. Amnon was so vexed, was so anxious that Tamar might marry somebody else, that he fosters this entire plan to abuse his sister when all he had to do was ask King David if he could marry her. He could have had her for life. Help your children deal with their emotions. And you say, well, my children have special emotional needs. There's a lot of resources out there that can help you. But parents, it's your responsibility to help them. And the reason most kids don't have their emotions helped with is because most parents, truly, one of the big components, they're not doing the work that's involved. Before you think I'm just crazy, ADHD drugs, 3,655,472 kids on ADHD drugs. According to the latest report, this is 2017 numbers, compiled in 2018. So 18 will be, it's being compiled right now. Antidepressants, I thought this number was surprising and disturbing. Kids on antidepressants, 0 years to 5 years old, zero to five. Antidepressants, 38,534. Zero to one. It breaks down 0 to 1, 6,000, 2 to 3, 10,000, 4 to 5, 21,000, 6 to 12, 574,000, 13 to 17, 1,503,000, for a total of 2,100,315. Antipsychotics, a total of 1,194,805. 0 to 5 years old, 85,143. 6 to 12, 467,000. 13 to 17, 646,215. Anti-anxiety. Anti-anxiety. 0 to 5 years old, 389,558 on anti-anxiety medication for babies 0 to 5 years old. 6 to 12, 484,612. 13 to 17, 577,259. For a grand total of 1,445,509 kids on anti-anxiety medicine. God didn't give you your kids so that you could medicate them and just sit around and be the good, fun parent. It's just not why he did it. And I know that when I say that, and I'm not a medical doctor, but I will tell you that in all the research that I've done, that most of the medication that is being prescribed to kids, the psychotic type medication, antidepressants, antipsychotics, ADHD drugs, most of them are being, anti-anxiety, are being prescribed by people who are not qualified. They're being prescribed by medical doctors as opposed to even people who study, like child psychologists, child psychiatrists. I'm not even for that per se, but if you're going to have it, at least have that. But here's, and I'm not saying, listen, if your kids are on that, don't take them off because of this message, but you need to do a tremendous amount of introspection to find out why. But most of the time, this is what I've seen. This is totally anecdotal. I'm not saying this to any person in this church, but this is 27 years of working with teenagers. from my days back as a basketball coach to today, that most of the time it's so that it's easier on the parent. Let's drug our kids so it's easier on the parent. That's why. Well, you just don't know how hard it is with my kids. You don't know how hard it is raising our kids. I mean, at what point do we go, oh, no, they win. They've got the hardest kid ever. So what that becomes the... No, the Bible is the objective authority. And you're the parent. And you're called to help your kid and raise him up. And the blueness of the wound cleanseth away evil. But it doesn't mean just spank them. It means you gotta help them learn and provide and train them and teach them and guide them. You say, well, they just have fits and they're bouncing off the walls. Well, there might be some dietary issues involved in that. There might be some sedentary issues involved with that. Maybe they just need to go run 14 miles in a day. Well, I'm too busy to have them run, and I'm scared because they might get kidnapped. You realize we're the safest, listen to me, we are the safest in 2019 that humanity has ever been. The world's never been safer than it is right now. If you turn off 24-hour news cycles and stop getting CNN updates and like on your Twitter account, stop getting up junk that happens today and stop reading that stuff, you'd probably understand we're in a really safe world. And stop teaching your kids stranger danger. Well, if they're a stranger, be scared of them. Why would you do that? How about teach your kids... You don't help people find their puppy. And you don't take free ice cream from anyone. And you don't get in anyone's car. And if you do that, I'm going to shoot your left foot. You just don't do those things. But teach your children. A recent survey asked teens how happy they are and how much of their leisure time they spend on various activities, including non-screen activities such as in-person social interaction, and also texting, social media, web browsing. There's not a single exception to this. Those who spend 6 to 9 hours a week on social media, listen to this, 6 to 9 hours a week on social media, that's total, 6 to 9 hours on social media. This would be very close to adults. Are 47% more likely to say they are unhappy. Those who spend an above average amount of time with their friends in person are 20% less likely to say they're unhappy. Maybe part of the happiness problem is that you're letting your kids on social media. Because here's what Instagram says, my life is great and your life stinks, loser. And so the emotional quadrant and the struggle just goes through the roof. It just goes through the roof. So teach your children. David didn't teach Amnon how to deal with his emotions. Teach your children how to deal with their emotions. Number three, tell your children no. Tell your children no. Oh, go back to point number two. Okay, go back to point number two. Sorry. When your children are young, make them play outside. Let me say it again. Make them play outside. There should not be the obesity epidemic that we have in our country. We got kids that are obese and parents who starve themselves. Something's not right. Make them play outside. Limit screen time outside of family screen time. Limit screen time to 30 minutes a week. 30 minutes a week. They can play Fortnite for 30 minutes a week. 30 minutes a week. Yeah, 30 minutes. Why? Because they're playing it with dudes you don't know. They're playing it with people you don't know. And they're influencing them. And you don't know what that influence will do. And you don't know what's going to pop up on a screen that will take your kids down a rabbit hole of sin that you're going to struggle with for the rest of their life. We bought Judith. This is a long time. Again, humanity's never dealt with this. We bought Judith a Kindle because we were cool parents. She's 13 years old and we bought her a Kindle. Kindle, doesn't have internet access. Just download books that your mom and I will buy for you on Amazon. You can't do anything. We've got the passwords, but you can get on there and you can read these books. And we're going to put every Christian book on there. We're going to put Do Hard Things on there. We're going to put Passion and Purity on there. We're going to put How to Win Friends and Influence People for Teenage Girls on there. We're going to put on there, your dad is amazing, and he said so. That's why. We're going to put everything we possibly can that will help you on there. Okay, Dad, that'll be great. We're going to put biographies on there. We'll even put some fun Christian girl, teen girl books that make me gross out. We'll put those on there. It's like a Hallmark channel in writing, or a Hallmark movie in writing. We're going to put those on there. Those will be absolutely fantastic. You'll love that. That'll be a lot of fun. Great. Super excited. She's reading it, but, you know, I didn't understand the technology. I put every safety measure I was told to put on there. I read up on it. I studied it. I put parental blocks on it, Burn. I did everything I knew how to do. But I didn't know they would send ads. And they sent ads for books. And they would send sample copies. I didn't know they sent sample copies. This was new. This is 7-8 years ago. This was new. It's all new to me. I didn't know anything. I wasn't giving them iPads like most of my friends had. I thought, man, we're being safe, we're being fun, and this will be great. But they sent her a book on a lesbian relationship between teen girls. One chapter. She read one chapter, and she will struggle with same-sex attraction for the rest of her life. Oh, that wouldn't happen to my kid. You're a fool if you think that. You are a fool if you think that. That literally, 30 minutes a day, or 30 minutes a week. Why? Because you're a dad. As cool as you think you are. I mean, I've got friends that have made millions of dollars in the internet security business that have called me late in the night. When a friend calls late in the night, you always take the call. Because either it's accidental or important. Hey, bro, what's going on? Dude, my son just came to me, and he has been struggling majorly with really bad pornography for a while. Why? He got an iPad. I put every restriction on there. I put military-grade restrictions on there. And you know what he did? What? He figured some way around it. I had another pastor call me. Hey, Brother Chadwick, would you pray for me? I need counsel. This is the story he told me. My daughter is 9 years old. We gave her an iPad. We put all the parental blocks. We put everything on it. She heard on the playground that boys kiss girls. She thought that was the grossest thing she ever heard in her life, and she just wanted to see it online. So she typed in boys kissing girls. She said it blocked her, but she kept working at it. At 9 years old, she kept working at it. He said, my daughter's not even that smart. She just kept working at it. He goes, my wife walked in her room the other night. My daughter wasn't paying attention, and my wife saw that she had her iPad on under her sheets. Like we used to have a book with a light, had the iPad on under her sheets. My wife lifted back the sheets, grabbed the iPad. He said, and it was some of the worst pornography produced today. My 9-year-old daughter saw that. See, because foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. You say, oh, that'll never happen to my kids. No. I know all these kids. I know them very well. And they are wonderful young people. And God's given a huge amount of victory and grace in their life. But don't think that they won't struggle for the rest of their life with those things. And I'm not saying we're in a transitional period in human history as humanity. Their parents were trying to do the right thing. They really were. Their motives were pure. But the way they went about it caused damage. And so we have to learn a lesson by people who didn't intend to cause problems and to people who only intended good. And we have to learn a lesson that we have to supervise everything. If your kids have a screen, they need to have a parent watching. Or they get a flip phone with no screen. And by the way, young people, I just want you to know that CEOs of Fortune 500 companies, that's almost all that they use are flip phones. They make their assistants have screens. You know why? CEOs of Fortune 500, people who make money and people who do well in life, don't want to be distracted with Facebook dings. Because what successful people aren't doing is going, I wonder what Maybell ate for lunch there on the side of the road in Louisiana. Oh, their baby vomited. Oh, honey, check out that cat video. They're just not doing that. That's not what successful folks do. That's what people with way too much time on your hands. If you got too much time on your hands, start a business. That goes for you guys too. Limit screen time. Encourage reading. Make them go outside. Teach them to work. You say, I don't have anything to do. Bring them over to my house. I got a wood pile. They can chop wood till it's the size of kindling. Literally. Teach them to work. Limit video games. If the only way you can get your kids quiet is to give them a screen so they can play a video game, you are in a very bad place and you need a lot of work. Number three, I'm done. Number three, I'm not really, but I am. Tell your children no. David never told Amnon no. Here's the most powerful word ever. No. Not, I'll think about it. Now, sometimes you have to think about it, but you need to teach your children no. Sometimes you should say no just for the sake of no. Like, hey, can I go over to Bonnie's house? No. Why? Because I want you here. Well, but they're going to have fun over there. I'm going to have fun over here. Well, what are we going to do? I'm just going to stare at you. And the more you ask, the creepier it gets. So you keep asking, I keep being creepy. No. Hey, young people, it's okay for your parents to tell you no. Matter of fact, it's a requirement that they tell you no, or that means you're in charge. And the last thing the world needs is any of you in charge. And I don't mean that rudely. I just mean you're not there yet. One day you'll be there. But if you're 14 years old or 15 years old, I don't want you making decisions on anything other than maybe what kind of Pop-Tarts you like. Strawberry. Chocolate? Oh, strawberry's way better. Tell them no. No, you're not going out with them. No, you can't work there. No, I don't want them to be your friend. No, they can't be your friends. No. I think your project stunk. Pastor, you would say that? If it stinks, it stinks. What are you going to do in the real world when you, 30 minutes before the project is due, you take a Sharpie and your presentation is like, things to do in Bangkok, eat. That's a crummy project. Shouldn't your kids hear that it's crummy in the safety of your home as opposed to an environment where they're going to be ridiculed for the rest of their life? Well, I just don't want to hurt their feelings. You don't want to hurt their feelings because you have a bunch of pride in your heart. And you're more worried about your kids' response to you than you are them living in the real world. How many of you in the military have ever had somebody come in and go, I can't believe you didn't like that. We had a guy come through and he said, hey, I'm the big designer and I'll redesign your whole daycare. And we said, okay, go ahead, but we're not signing a contract with you. And so he sent us some stuff, and truly the designs that he gave, it was like out of the Orwellian novel of Mirror Houses. I mean, it was creepy. And so he sent John, he goes, hey, what did Pastor Chadwick think about that? And John goes, and John's really nice. John's not like me. And John's like, yeah, I don't think he really enjoyed it all that much. He goes, John goes, I think it was a little much for him. You need to tone it down a little bit. So the guy toned it down, and literally I had nightmares about it. I mean, it was just bad. And like the next thing we got was just as bad, and the next thing we got was just as bad. And like, I don't want any of that. I'm not paying for any of that. And I didn't sign a contract, and I didn't tell him I'd pay for anything. So whatever. About 3 months later, he calls us. He says, hey, where's my check? And so John comes, hey, Pastor, so-and-so called him. I'm like, oh, what do you want? He wanted to know where his check was. I said, what did you say to him? He said, I don't know. I said, sounds like a good answer. And so he called the guy back and said, yeah, Pastor doesn't know what you're talking about. We didn't sign a contract. He doesn't know what you're talking about. Well, I did a lot of work for that, and I should be paid for my work. And John goes, yeah, no, you shouldn't be paid because your work was not good. wouldn't you rather that guy had learned that lesson at home, where it could be refined and he could learn a work ethic and quality and product assurance and being able to provide all of that? Well, I can even feel it in the room. Like, Pastor, you would tell your kids their project is bad? Yes! Why? Because I love them. Well, they won't listen to me. Well, then you need to put the car in reverse and start some things over. Like, they need to learn the character of doing a good job. And the benefit of work is just the benefit of work. If you only work because you get paid, you're bad. That's not good. The joy of work is doing something that has meaning and value. I worked at McDonald's. Most fun I've ever had as a job, until I became a pastor. No lie. Loved it more than all the other jobs, businesses I started. Loved working at McDonald's. We'd sit in there, and our job was to provide food for the masses, and we were trying to take it to 2 billion people in my one restaurant, and I could make 36 Big Macs in 3 minutes or less. And most of them did not fall on the floor. It was a great job. It was a lot of fun. And we took pride in the fact that we hit that squeeze bottle and all three little things of special Thousand Island sauce came out on the lettuce just perfectly. And we didn't have any lettuce falling over, and the meat was centered on the patty. Man, sometimes you get a patty, and it's like they put bread and patty on two separate things until you build your own Big Mac. Man, this ain't Fuddruckers. Come on, put it together for crying out loud. Take pride in your work. Teach your children. Tell them. Number four, I went totally off track there, sorry. It was good, it was just off track. Number four, deal with problems. Deal with problems. Here's the truth, nobody enjoys dealing with problems. I certainly don't. But problems that aren't dealt with only grow. Your kid's not going to get rid of the pornography addiction just with time. It's only going to get worse. Your lazy kid's not going to develop a work ethic on their own. Your kid that's an emotional basket case isn't going to grow out of it. They're going to grow into it, and they're going to learn to mask it. And then they're going to be living in your basement at 35, and you're going to have to get a court order to get them out of your house. You say that would never happen. It happened last year in New York. Deal with problems. David hears about Amnon raping his daughter. He's very angry. Verse 21, does nothing. You say, what should have been done? According to the law, Amnon should have lost his life. But because David did nothing, you know what happened? Absalom became bitter towards his dad. Through the course of time, Absalom starts a civil war. Tens of thousands of people die because of David's inaction. Well, I think we should just ride this out and see what happens. Your children aren't waves. And they don't need to be ridden out. You have to deal with stuff. You have to deal with it in grace. I know that people don't take my personality for the way you should deal with stuff. You could tell your kids no. See, when I tell my kids no, it's just like, no, we're not going to do that. Kind of like a white Bill Cosby. If you remember the Cosby, I guess you shouldn't reference Bill Cosby anymore, but I'm old and I don't care. Well, that's kind of how it's always been. Like, that's, you know, what are you thinking, Theo? Come on. You might not be that way. You might be really nice. You might be like Miriam and take a long route. No, we're still not going to do that. That's okay. You have to be the person God made you to be. But you have to say no. You have to deal with problems. You have to be very intentional as to who hangs out with your kids, and you have to work really hard on your kids' emotions. Think of how many people were wounded because of David's inaction. Not that just lost their lives, but people who were wounded. The nation of Israel was permanently scarred, and eventually, listen to what I'm about to say, eventually the kingdoms split. And we can trace it back to David's inaction. They're worth it. They're worth you getting over yourself. They're worth, I'm going to say it again, they're worth you getting over yourself. The reason for inaction is apprehension or laziness. There's no other way to say it. In 2008 at the Beijing Olympics, the United States men's and women's 4x1 relay, they run 400 meters, four people run it, it'd be like 40-something seconds, early, low 40s, were projected to win the gold medal, both men and women. The fastest runners on the course, on the track, by far. As they ran around the track, they're running. It's not run and tag, it's run and pass the baton. And in the same year, both men and women ran. The baton is about 14 inches long. It's very light aluminum, round cylinder, smooth. And all that you say as you're running is the guy running behind says stick, and the guy in front reaches back his hand, and it's normally going to be the opposite hand so that you get a wider spot to grab as you run, bang, run, bang, and you go through a ton of practice, stick, stick, and it's going to be the left hand or right hand depending on how the runner, the up runner or the coming up runner prefers. Run, stick, run, stick. Gold medal. But we lost the gold and we didn't medal because we dropped the baton. Here's what's happening in this generation. In so many ways, we've dropped the baton. And this isn't an anti-social media thing, but we've picked up the baton of social media and of Facebook and of TV and of video games and of Fortnite. And I'm not against those things in their morally neutral environment, but I am saying it doesn't seem like we're able to balance them well. And it's costing us young people, left and right. And young people who aren't having their emotions dealt with, maybe because parents aren't having their emotions dealt with. Folks, we got to pass the baton. And we're not going to navigate the teen years without stick and reaching back and being intentional about what we do. Because you don't pass the baton accidentally. It takes a bucket load of work. It takes a ton of work. And it's way harder than the other relays. The 4x1 is the hardest relay to pass the baton by, obviously. Raising children in 2019 demands the grace of God. You cannot succeed without it. But grace is not telling you that what you're doing is okay. Grace is truly telling you what you're doing is not okay. And here's how you change. And here's how you morph that. And here's how you adjust that. And God says, and I will give you the strength to make the adjustments. See, wisdom is known of her children. Everybody lives a philosophy. And if your kids have squandered their opportunity after opportunity after opportunity, man, that's a reflection of maybe what went on in the home. It's work. We had a lot of meetings at our family till late into the night. And we're not out of the woods yet, but I think I see a clearing, maybe. It could just be a couple trees have been mowed down, I don't know. But I think I see a clearing coming I think I see a clearing coming. You say, Pastor, it wasn't easy for me. Maybe it wasn't easy because you didn't put the work in. There've been a lot of late nights and a lot of early mornings and a lot of discussions and a lot of tears and a lot of prayers and a lot of drawing on people's wisdom and strength. Calling people, bro, I need your help. You've raised great kids that are passionate about Jesus. I need your wisdom like no other time in my life. Be super vulnerable with them. I said to some friends, I've totally messed it all up. I need your help. Help me. So now at 22 and 20, my daughters have some godly men and women in their life that they are able to call and say, my parents are saying this and I don't like what they say. You say, well, what do they tell your kids? They take them on this long journey and they bring them right back to, it's biblical. And that's all I could ever ask. Let's spend a few minutes tonight just in prayer, maybe for our families.